Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Hugo Chavez's death has drawn the world's attention as Venezuela faces regime change for the first time in 14 years. Since he came to power in 1999, Chavez has loomed large on the world stage as a hugely controversial and contradictory leader. In Comandante, Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, journalist Rory Carroll investigates how Chavez went from being an impoverished boy from the plains with big league baseball aspirations to becoming a military officer, coup leader, media darling, and elected leader. Formerly The Guardian's Latin American bureau chief, Rory Carroll has covered war zones, survived a kidnapping in Iraq, and reported on South Africa's post-apartheid transition. He was stationed in Caracas for the research and writing of Comandante, and it is a pleasure to welcome Rory Carroll to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure having you on the program. You know, I don't know, I mean, as from a publishing sense, I mean, this book pretty much was released the day Hugo Chavez died, and which is weirdly coincidental, but obviously it was something that it was, you know, you were the go-to person because you were out there talking about this subject. I'm curious as to what the last couple of weeks has been like for you.
It's been very hectic and surreal because, yeah, this book had been, the publication had been planned for so long, it turned out to be a complete coincidence that he died at this time. And so, I mean, I was back in Venezuela to cover the funeral for The Guardian, and really it was amazing to be back there and see this country now suddenly without Hugo Chavez, and yet in many ways his voice, his image, and his presence was more ubiquitous than ever, because his successors are doing their best to fill the country with this image of him, and say that Chavez vive, Chavez still lives, and this will, and they hope this way to kind of ride his coattails, his ghostly coattails, if you like, and keep power this way. So it's very strange, surreal days in Venezuela at the moment.
Talk a little bit about how much of a surprise. I mean, we all knew that he had health problems, but it was somewhat mysterious, and as to the severity of them. And I ask the question because do you think that these successors were sort of had this in the works for a while?
Yeah, I think they knew from about 2 years ago that the cancer was terminal. I mean, there were rumors, and I had, you know, friends in the government who basically said, yes, this is terminal. And yet they denied, officially though, they denied it. And Chavez last year, he claimed it to have been cured. And he said it's because he's facing re-election. And so he went through this fiction of having been cured. He said he'd been treated and the cancer was gone. It had been a miracle. He went to a special church to give thanks and so on. And then he proceeded to give the performance of his life to convince Venezuelans that, yes, he really was cured. And what we now know is that he was actually taking a big cocktail of drugs, especially steroids, to give him this almost superhuman energy so that he could campaign, so he could go on the stump and give this impression that he was a vibrant, healthy guy. And in fact, he gave one of the longest speeches of his life. One was like 9.5 hours, nonstop speech, no toilet breaks. And this was his way of showing Venezuelans that, yes, he really was cured. But it was a fiction. He wasn't. He was dying. And to the point that I'm told that, in fact, he probably accelerated his own death because he would be out campaigning in the rain. And this was a guy in the final stages of cancer. I mean, and he did this because he felt he had to win power. He had to win the election, even though he was going to die soon afterwards, because this would be the best way he could protect and preserve the revolution. And there's kind of a real pathos there, and that is quite tragic.
If there is a theme in the book, however, picking up on what you were just talking about, it seems that this is the norm where fictions have replaced truths, that is sort of the modus operandi.
Yes, I mean, Venezuela in many ways is falling down the rabbit hole. You know, it's through the looking glass of what you hear is not what you is not the reality. And there's always, of course, a gulf between any political rhetoric in any country and reality. But in Venezuela, it reached extreme levels of extremity that were just remarkable. I mean, for instance, Chavez would keep speaking about how he'd created Venezuela, turned it into a breadbasket, and that now it was going to be exporting food to the region, which was a total lie, basically, because Venezuela is importing more food than ever before, because he basically ruined agriculture. He harassed private-owned farms and ranches, and so that these people packed up and abandoned the land, and he put a lot of money into trying to do socialist cooperatives in agriculture, which, and so that's some very good ideas behind it, but unfortunately they just didn't work. The application was bungled, and the result was that Venezuela is now having to import more food than ever before, and yet Chavez would, and his successors would show this impression of bounty, as if Venezuela is now this amazing agricultural powerhouse. And it's just so not the case. And I could go on with a million examples, but it's a level of disconnect between reality and rhetoric.
You portray this as a unique experiment in socialistic power which veers among enlightenment, tyranny, and farce.
Yes, because there was enlightenment in that he would speak in very often in progressive language. He would speak about dignifying people, and he'd speak about respecting Venezuela's tradition of its indigenous history, something that had been much neglected by his predecessors. He would urge people to take pride in their skin, and instead of Venezuelans traditionally would often, you know, look to kind of blonde, pale-skinned people as an epitome of beauty, he would say, no, hold on, you know, take pride in being brown, take pride in my color too. And I think that was a good, helpful thing. But at the same time, then there would be the farce. For instance, he would talk about the currency. He would rename the currency the Bolivar, the Fuerte, the Bolivar Fuerte, the strong Bolivar. Whereas the reality were his policies were gutting the currency, and it lost about 90% of its value and was actually devalued about five times during his rule. And yet he would maintain this fiction that it was the currency was stronger than ever before. So you had this weird kind of vibe between, you know, kind of enlightened language and yet total kind of Orwellian deception that's being practiced on the people.
Let us talk about that deception on the people, because you refer to it almost as a full-blown personality cult. Among this authoritarianism, among this economic fiasco that he is held up on a grand pedestal.
Yes, it did become over time a personality cult. And just to give you a sense of like how a typical day under Chavez's rule would be, you would wake up, you would turn on the television, for instance, and there you would hear him or see him on a TV show, and he'd be maybe phoning in or a similar show to this, and he would be talking about something about maybe agricultural policy or some diplomatic spat with the United States. And then you turn on the TV a few hours later, and there he is on another program. Maybe now he's reviewing troops, or it's a press conference with his oil minister. And then a few hours later, he's on the radio and on TV again. This time he's singing a song because it's Mother's Day, and he wants to sing a song to his mother. He's reminiscing about his boyhood. And then later on that night, around midnight, you turn on the TV again, and there he is. And this time on one of his favorite TV shows called The Razor Blade, where he'd be bantering with the host, and they'd be denouncing his opponents as vampires and squealing pigs, and he'd be kind of thundering about the United States Empire and how they've been trying to assassinate him. And there you go. And that was a typical day in Venezuela. And imagine that over time, over 14 years, and the effect that had. It was the Truman Show.
So where are we now? It's been a few weeks, and we are, as you say, there's still this, you know, there is this cult of personality that lives on and on these coattails, but eventually that is going to vanish. So what do you see coming in next?
Well, I think firstly, his designated heir, Nicolas Maduro, who was his former foreign minister, Maduro used to be a bus driver, and then he was a union leader, and now he is the new Chavez, if you like. I think he will win the election on April 14th, and he will win a six-year term. And in the short term, I think he'll be okay because he's a power broker, and he'll be able to negotiate between the different factions of Chavismo. And it's a very divided movement in many ways between radical ideologues on the left, between military guys who just want to stay in power, between opportunists. And I think he would be quite effective at keeping the show on the road by keeping these factions together. But in the long term, I think he will really struggle because Chavez's charisma really, in many ways, was the glue of the revolution. He was able to just dominate Venezuela in many ways through force of personality. And Maduro does not have that. I mean, the guy does not have enough charisma to try to mimic Chavez. Mm. Although we've seen really bizarre efforts so far of him to be Hugo Chavez, and the fact that he's mimicking the way Hugo Chavez used to walk, he's trying to repeat the way Chavez would burst into song, the way he would tell anecdotes, and it just doesn't work. It's not the same guy. Chavez was unique, and Maduro can never be Chavez, and I think over time that's going to be a problem.
Do you think that there's a sacrificial lamb quality to him in the sense that this is the placeholder until the country decides what direction it wants to go in?
Well, it's a very good question. I think Venezuela is lost at the moment. Its institutions have been gutted, that they've either completely politicized and also dysfunctional in terms of just doing whatever it is it's supposed to do, be it either the central bank or the Ministry of Agriculture or the military. They've all been subsumed into this what is now an increasingly weird experiment of keeping power, and yet the system doesn't collapse because it has lots of oil money. Which continues to gush in, and also they're now increasingly borrowing billions from China. So you have this system where kind of nothing really works, but there appears to be lots of money, and they can use this money to kind of fill in the holes in the system. And so meantime, you have, say, the middle class are emigrating, and yet the country, nobody starves because there is so much cash. And so it's this weird system of moneyed dysfunction, and I think that could go on for quite some time.
The name of the book is Comandante. It is a riveting account of Hugo Chavez and how he was able to hold this country for 15 years, and it's just a fascinating read. Comandante, Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. It is published by the Penguin Press. Rory Carroll, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And a pleasure on our end as well. Thank you so much. Again, Comandante is the name of the book, Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. It's published by the Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.